So what at all do you remember about those 1970s up through 1980 years and Barfield and being an Auburn fan during that time?
I remember we went to the games. Auburn fans were there, but I don't think there was a lot of confidence. And I think, you know, everybody had a good time, but it wasn't – everybody enjoyed being there. We wanted to beat our rivals and that kind of stuff. But, you know, there wasn't a lot of, I guess, hope that we were going to conquer the mountain. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm trying to think back for myself. I feel like my mindset back then, there's a thing called the Auburn mindset that Shug Jordan used to talk about, but I feel like my Auburn mindset back then was, man, I sure am tired of Alabama winning all the time. And I remember thinking, gosh, I hope we have a winning season. And it would be awesome if we could beat Alabama this year. Maybe this is the year. Maybe this is the year we'll beat Alabama, but probably not.
Yes.
You know, you'd always hope springs eternal. Every November, you'd be thinking, well, maybe this is the one. Maybe this is the one. And then I remember thinking, maybe we'll go to a bowl game. Because we could have, like I said, I think we could have gone in, we could have gone in 79, but I think 79 and 80, we were on probation. And let me just tell you, if you get on probation after consecutive seasons of 4-7, 4-6-1, 4-7, 6-5, and 6-4-1, whatever you did to get on probation, you needed to do more of it, not less, because it didn't work.
It was not the Hugh Freeze full implementation strategy.
No.
Say that.
I'm just trying to figure out what investigator looked at Auburn in 75, 76, 77, 78. What investigator looked at that team and said, I need to investigate them? Clearly there's something shady going on. I mean, wouldn't most investigators look at those seasons and say, oh, those boys are toeing the line. They're honest to a fault down there. There's nothing shady going on there. Wow. I mean, in fact, the NCAA probably would call up that 76-77 team and call up Shug or call up Barfield and go, you know, coach, if you need to cheat a little bit, we could look the other way. we could look the other way this one time. I mean, come on, man. This is embarrassing. But, gosh, we got on probation for doing crappy. I always say, if you're going to cheat, at least win, right? At least get something out of it. Even if they take it away later, you still had that feeling. The feeling they took away from us was 4-7, John. Yeah. Well, so 29, 25, and 1 in Barfield is gone. And do you remember what the buzz was right after Barfield was let go on the plains? You probably remember it better than I do because I was just seeing it on, like, Birmingham local television. Who were they talking about getting?
Vince Dooley?
Yes. Oh, man.
Because he was an Auburn alum.
Yep.
And he had won the national title. I think if they had not won the national title at Georgia, you know, so close before that, I think we might have hired him.
I think so. Yeah, I think there was just no way he could leave Georgia after 1980.
And Herschel was,
you know. And Herschel was still there. That'd be insane. Yeah, so. That's like if Pat Dye had left Auburn in 1983 to go to, like, Florida and left Bo and Lionel and all that and that defense. But I was going to say, hadn't Johnny Majors just left Pitt after a national championship to go to Tennessee?
Yeah, soon after.
I feel like there was a precedent for it. So even though we're sitting here saying, you know, he couldn't have left Georgia after the, you know, right after the national championship, I think it was really as much Herschel as it was the national championship, because Johnny Majors had just done it, I think like 76 or something. And so I think Auburn people were looking at what Johnny Majors had done and said, hey, if he would leave a national championship to come to his SEC school, his alma mater or whatever, then maybe Vince would do the same thing. And they tried, didn't they? They tried to get him.
Oh, yes.
But ultimately he stayed, and we looked around. And what did you think when that new name emerged? Do you remember thinking anything about it? I mean, I have vague memories.
I wasn't exactly doing flight tracking back then or anything. So
you weren't looking at the tail number on the airplane?
No, I wasn't. So we're joking about that. They probably didn't even do planes back then. They just drove around and met at the, you know, some coffee shop. So,
well, it'd be somewhere between here and Wyoming, I guess.
That's it. So, no, I mean, I didn't have any feeling when I heard we hired the Wyoming coach. I was like, well, I hope he's better. That was kind of my feeling.
Yeah.
And I'm confident that with the support of the Auburn people, the alumni, the former players, the student body, the faculty, administration, that we will be able to bring this great football tradition back to what it once was.
Well, I mean, the first thing we really heard about him, he'd been at East Carolina and for a couple of years, and he went to Wyoming, and I thought, well, that doesn't sound good. But then you find out, oh, he is one of Bear's boys, right? There's two things we found out about him with his roots. One is he was a tough, hard-nosed assistant for Bear. And now you kind of go, well, I don't approve of this Bear thing, you know, but, you know, clearly clearly Bear can coach, even if we despise him. And if Dye learned something from him there, that's good. And then the second thing we learned about him is he had been a Georgia Bulldog, an offensive lineman of all things. And so he had that pedigree, you know, it wasn't a head coaching pedigree. His head coaching resume was pretty thin, really. But he had that background. He's an old country boy from Georgia. He played at Georgia. He was an All-American player. And then he went and, you know, the story came out that he'd been in, I think, the Army. And when he got out of the Army, he like called up Bear Bryant and asked for a job. And Bear said, be in my office at like 5 o'clock tomorrow morning. And so Dye shows up in his Army uniform, I think. It was like his dress Army uniform at Bear's office at 5 o'clock in the morning. And like Bear's already there, like, what took you so long? You're late, you know. And so he got the job and worked his way up. There's always these fun stories about how these coaches start out their careers, you know, just doing anything. You know, you remember Tuberville had like a trailer and was working frying fish in a fish restaurant or something while he was, you know, there's always these fun stories about that. But so Dye came in. And do you remember what he said at his interview that really sold people on him as far as, like, they said, how long will it take you to beat Alabama?
He said 60 minutes,
yep. It actually took him 120 minutes, but that's quibbling, right? Because we lost the first time, but it was a tough game in 81. But
the spirit of the answer was right.
Absolutely.
You know, the spirit of the answer was, I need a five-year plan. It's let me get on the field with them and I will beat them.
Yeah. Yeah. What he was saying was he was big on saying you play football for 60 minutes. So rather than saying it's going to take me this many years to build a program up to that level, he said, if my guys will play the best of their abilities for 60 minutes of football, we could beat them. And that was true. It didn't hurt having the greatest athlete in history as a freshman running back either, but you know, that's fine. So that first season with Dye, we go 5-6. And I remember my granddad saying, well, he had the same record as the guy we just fired. So granddaddy wasn't as patient, okay? But we did win a couple of SEC games. And the ones they lost were impressive. I remember that we went up to Tennessee, right? I mean, okay, we had another one of these stupid Wake Forest games. In fact, I want to say this was one of the first night games. Was that Wake Forest game on September 19th that we lost by 3. But then we went up to Neyland Stadium to play Tennessee, and we, you know, that was a team we had struggled with the last few years. And in front of 92,612 people, Auburn came within 3 points of knocking off Tennessee. And that's the game where Pat Dye in the locker room, the players were kind of crying and everything. And that's what he famously said, there's going to be more days like this, you know, but you got to get up and do it again and again and again. That's that famous speech that he gave that really got him motivated.
There's going to be a lot of days when you lay your guts on the line and you come away empty handed. Ain't a damn thing you can do about it but go back and lay them on the line again and again and again. Every coach, manager, glad to be associated with you. You'll keep fighting like you did today. You'll keep playing like that. You can build a foundation that we can live a long, long time on it all.
The next week,
we got to put it on the line.
Yeah.
And you got to do it again and again and again.
Right. And you're not always going to win, but that's all right. You just get up and you do it again. That's right. And it was really motivating, very inspirational. And then the next week we went to Lincoln, Nebraska and played Nebraska, who was a year away from being the team of the century, and lost 17-3. And that's not bad.
Nope.
In fact, I think the story was the Nebraska fans applauded Auburn when they left the field. And this was before Bo, too. There was no Bo on this team. This was just a scrappy, you know, first year under Pat Dye, only his fourth game as head coach. And we went and lost by 3 at Tennessee and lost by 14 at Lincoln, Nebraska. And you could tell something was changing. The tide was turning a little bit. We'd gone to the wishbone. What did you think about that, right? We'd been using all kind of offensive sets and formations under Barfield. Dye comes in there and puts in the wishbone when it was still kind of the cutting edge thing. Do you remember that?
Oh yeah, that was exciting. I mean, it was different and it was fun. Football wasn't the same back then. Drives were much longer.
Slower, yeah.
Slower. There wasn't many explosive chunk kind of plays. And it was, you know, more running, but the wishbone seemed to generate big plays on offense and keep the other team off balance and allow you to keep the ball away from them. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was great, and we had good players for it, and you know, it was fun to watch the quarterback in it, and it was fun to watch the running backs in it. So I enjoyed the wishbone when we started putting it in. I thought it was really entertaining to watch.
Particularly when we found the quarterback that could run it so smoothly in Randy Campbell in 82. 81, we were still feeling around for a quarterback. And I don't even remember who our main quarterback was in 81. You know, we had several there in the late 70s, early 80s that were mostly running quarterbacks, and their names just elude me at the moment. I used to know them. But after that loss at Nebraska, we had LSU at home and beat them 19-7. And it's like that was really the first big win. It was only the second win for Pat Dye. But it was the first big win where it looked like we really were turning things around. And then the next week, we go to Georgia Tech to Grant Field and beat them 31-7. So you had to feel like suddenly, even though we ended up 5-6, it's very
similar. There was some momentum.
Yeah, it's very similar to Tuberville's first year, where we went 5-6 under him the first year, too, in 99. But you could feel like things were changing. There was a different sense to it all. I like that Pat Dye always would say, and his players would say, he talked about wolf sign. We talked about this in one of our columns one time, that he would say there's wolf sign, like after a practice. Because, mm-hmm. you know, some of our best players in 81, they say that the toughest practice they ever had, college or pro, was that first year, 81, under Pat Dye. Because our big defensive lineman that went to the Steelers later. He said he just wanted a T-shirt that said, "I survived the 1981 Auburn spring practice," you know, or whatever. Because he said Pat Dye tried to kill us, basically. And he drove off some guys, but the ones that stayed, you know, it's kind of like Bear Bryant with the Junction Boys, you know. The ones that stay have been through fire, you know. And he would talk about wolf sign, like blood and fur and bits of skin lying around on the ground, and it looks like everything's torn up. And that's what... that's what practice looked like, blood and fur lying around, and you know, things had been torn up a lot. So I think Pat Dye pretty much laid down the sense that things were changing and changing pretty rapidly, and certainly 82 would be a different year. You know, we go on to lose by 11 to Georgia. We did beat Florida at home. That's awesome. On Halloween. We played Florida on Halloween a lot. Georgia was number 4. We lost by 11 to them in Athens. And then we came back 2 weeks later, because there used to be a two-week break between Georgia and Alabama, an off week. And Alabama at this point was number 4. So we played the number 4 team 2 weeks, 2 games in a row. This is when it was still in Legion Field every week. And I remember that we led them 17-16 late in the game. Because I remember thinking, oh, 17-16. The last time we beat them, you know, 8 years ago at that point, it was 17-16. And we had them 17-16. And then they ended up scoring a couple of times, going for 2 and missing it or whatever. And the final score was 28-17, Alabama, because they just had more depth. And as Dye would say, they played for 60 minutes. And that was also, do you remember what 81 also was as far as the Iron Bowl is concerned? We relate to the Bear. It was his 315th win, which was important because Amos Alonzo Staggin won 314, and it was when it was when Bear became the winningest Division I coach in history for a while.
That's right.
And it was supposed to come a couple of weeks earlier, and I remember they lost maybe to LSU, and they tied Southern Miss or somebody. And I remember when those things happened, I remember thinking, oh, no, that means it's getting bumped down closer and closer, and then, yep, it was going to be us. And they made a huge production out of it, you know, oh, this is Bears' coronation as the king of all college football, beating on, and it beating us was just like the cherry on top for them. So anyway, that would be the end of Pat Dye's first year. And as Auburn fans, we were, you know, 5-6, we weren't thrilled, but you had to feel like things were getting better, right?
Yeah, and then there was he was bringing in toughness, the defense was getting better. And there was just, you know, the new offense. There was some hope on the horizon that we were closing the gap with people for sure.
Yeah. So you and I at this point in the beginning of the 80s, we're still in our hometowns in grade school. But even then, we probably knew that one of these days we would be down there. And I don't know if we could have ever guessed that by the time we got there, Auburn would be winning, beating Alabama 4 years in a row, 86 through 89. Playing Alabama in Auburn for the first time ever and winning three SEC championships in a row.
Nope.
So you can see why Pat Dye became so beloved so quickly. I mean, for those of you that maybe don't know, that weren't old enough or don't remember or whatever, in this last segment, John and I pretty much spelled out what it was like to be an Auburn fan before Pat Dye. So now we're looking at how it changed. And in our next installment, we will look at the experience of being an Auburn fan in the Pat Dye early years when things were getting better and better. We had Bo, we had Lionel James, and then Brent Fullwood. We had a defense that was world class. After so many years of having a sieve for a defense, we suddenly completely flipped that. And for many years, that was the one thing you could depend on after that was that Auburn – used to you could depend on Auburn having a bad defense. Pat Dye is the one that made Auburn and defense synonymous for so very long.
Yes.
And so it made all the difference. So any final thoughts as far as up through 81 and what it was like as an Auburn fan and what it felt like going forward?
But there was untapped potential, but it was hard to see it, I guess. But also that there wasn't a lot of huge wins and, you know, great seasons in there, but we still enjoyed them, and we enjoyed the wins when they came, and we look forward to brighter days ahead.
Oh, and indeed things were changing, and it would not be long at all before we would be hearing those famous words, courtesy of Jim Fife.
Nobody split. Give the ball up and over, and in, I believe, touchdown! Touchdown, Auburn!
We Believed is a production of the AU Wishbone and White Rocket Entertainment in association with thewareaglereader.com. I'm Reynolds Wolf. The show was produced and engineered by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer and brought to you by all of our great supporters on patreon.com. To join the AU Wishbone family, visit auwishbone.com. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.